Funding for Smart Talk is provided by Capital Blue Cross. For 80 years, Capital Blue Cross has offered products that provide peace of mind and promote good health, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Health and Wellness Centers that provide in-person service and inspire healthy living. Capital Blue Cross is behind you for whatever lies ahead. More information is at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross. Live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle, bringing quality care to your community through Harrisburg, Community Osteopathic, West Shore, Carlisle, Hanover, Lancaster, Lititz, and Memorial Hospitals. More information is available at upmcpinnacle.com.
Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. And welcome to a Smart Talk road trip at the National Civil War Museum in Harrisburg. Today is the first day of Black History Month, and over the next hour, we'll discuss several aspects of African American history and culture in central Pennsylvania. Up front, a new film has been produced called The African American Oral History Project, Part 1. The film features the voices of African Americans from the American Civil War through Reconstruction to modern times. The video presentation highlights the fascinating story of former slave and later United States Congressman Robert Smalls of South Carolina, even though there are ties here to central Pennsylvania, in addition to the national story of Ephraim Slaughter. The film also brings to light the personal struggles and triumphs of many others in the African American community located in South Central Pennsylvania. Joining us today, Robbie Daub, who is the producer of the African American Oral History Project, Robert Philbin, writer-director of the film, Caleb Jackson Jr., a local historian, and Sharon Williams is a family historian, and she is the great-granddaughter of Ephraim Slaughter. Welcome all of you to the program today.
Thank you.
Good to be with you.
We are not taking phone calls today, but we do have a live audience, and we encourage our audience to stand up here at the microphone and ask a question or make a comment if you'd like to participate in the program. First of all, Ruby Daub, I want to start with you as the producer. What was your inspiration for this film?
Well, first off, thank you, Scott, for having us here. We're very excited about the film and being able to share it with everyone. Bob Philbin and I were actually members of the Civil War Board, and we were kicking around ideas on how to better tell untold stories in the city of Harrisburg. And we came up with an oral history to tell stories that you don't typically hear about in Harrisburg. And this is actually a city I was born and raised and actually still live here. So it was very important to me, and that captured my attention.
When you say a oral history, that's much different than someone else telling the story, having a narrator and looking at photographs and that kind of thing. Why an oral history?
An oral history because it's actually coming from the person that was involved in that history. And that's important to capture that information before they're no longer here. So you're getting it, the true actual story. Yeah,
and a lot of these stories have been handed down through the years, and you're getting to hear them firsthand. Bob Philbin, you wrote the film, directed the film, and I want to say to everyone here who participated in the film that I got to see it for the first time yesterday. It is excellent. I mean, it is great looking to begin with, and the stories that it tell. I just think that... we don't need a Black History Month for someone to be interested in this film, and it doesn't have to be Black history. It is history, and it is a great film. So, Bob, kudos to you and the job that you did. What kind of stories were you looking to tell?
Well, we just wanted to capture the various families that were related to Ephraim Slaughter to begin with, because the museum had dedicated the
statue. National Civil War Museum, yeah.
He's right here, the statue. And this is an unusual project because normal films, you develop a concept, you write a script, you develop a shooting script. This was all done in reverse because we had a base of film on the stories that we were able to collect from the various families involved. Then we had to sort of work backwards. What was the theme that was common among the families? What were the major themes? Our main theme was Civil War to civil rights, so that sort of gave us a thematic through line. And then it was a matter of isolating the principal points that the families made. And then we had a local historian, Caleb and a national historian, Harry Jones, to kind of balance the stories that we were getting locally. Because family stories sometimes tend to hide certain facts for whatever reasons, and, you know, explore other facts.
Well, I wouldn't tell everything about my family.
Same here. So the narrative became really interesting and really fascinating, and for me it was a whole new experience. I mean, I got deeply involved with the African-American community here in Harrisburg, and I'd been involved for years in various positions around the city, but I really got a real good understanding of how this community has developed over time. And I think that comes through in the film. And that's, it is, as you said, Scott, you know, African-American history is a very important theme in American history, but it's American history that really the African-American community has contributed to, especially these days.
I'm curious, what did you learn as you were writing and researching? What did you learn about Central Pennsylvania, Harrisburg's African-American history?
Well, there's certain, I come from New York. So the African-American community in New York is a whole different story than the community here in Harrisburg. Very tight community, very church-based, neighborhood-based. That comes out in the films. Family, supporting family. Everybody in the city seems to be related somehow. They look for relationships. They look for bloodlines, et cetera, to emphasize that community. Now, some folks, and it's expressed in the film, see this as weakening, as segregation went away, Jim Crow went away, there's sort of a diversity that's developing that kind of undermines some of these values. I don't think that's true, but it looks like it could be true if you look at different statistics.
You know, a film like this, if a lot of people got to see it, maybe it does bring people together and realize how close the community once was and could be again, yes, if that be the case. Caleb Jackson, you know, you've been on our show many times. Also mentioned, Ruby mentioned Harry Jones.
Harry Jones, yes.
Has been on our program, and a nationally renowned black historian who does seem to spend a lot of time in Harrisburg. He does come here fairly often. But Caleb, you know, I think the last time we talked was about Jackie Robinson.
Jackie Robinson, that's right. Yes, baseball, yes.
But you have a great knowledge of African-American history in Harrisburg and Central Pennsylvania. What sticks out to you about this film?
Many things. The stories that I learned. First of all, let me say that I'm proud to say that I was born in Harrisburg on Aberdeen Street in 1930. And my father operated a barbershop from 1920 to 1970 in Harrisburg. So I met a lot of people in a barbershop
telling stories.
So some were true and some weren't. But
that's true.
But it was fascinating because, and then when we made the movie, all the people that were interviewed, I actually knew each one of them. And I knew their backgrounds. So when I did my introduction, I was able to talk about the things that were going to come because I knew it firsthand.
As someone who was a Harrisburg native and a historian, what are you most proud of?
Most proud of the total history of Harrisburg. For instance, I remember the World War I soldiers, when there was no World War II. Remember the Civil War soldiers, ex-slaves. And it's the fascinating thing is that the history continues to move on. We're better off since we have desegregation, but we still have the old stories to rely on.
Someone brought up Jim Crow, and Jim Crow we often think of as strictly a Southern thing. Were there Jim Crow laws? I mean, obviously we're talking about discrimination here in Harrisburg.
Yes. In fact, the schools were segregated at one time. Now, I was lucky enough to go to Bose School, which was integrated, and maybe four or five African Americans in that school at the time. But there were also Wickersham and Calder buildings and Downey that were completely segregated with all Negro students in.
And someone also mentioned that, I don't know, is that a statue or a wax figure? I'm not sure. Ephraim Slaughter. And I have to admit, now this is one of the most lifelike I have ever seen. Earlier when I came in today, I was looking, there's also a good-sized photograph of Abraham Lincoln and Albert Pinkerton, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw this man standing over to my side with a cane. I did a double take,
yes,
not realizing that that was not a live person.
Yes.
But Ephraim Slaughter is a part of the film, and we're honored to have Sharon Williams, who is Ephraim Slaughter's great-granddaughter here. Ms. Williams, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me, and you're a family historian, by the way, as well. Tell me about your great-grandfather. What is noteworthy about Ephraim Slaughter here in central Pennsylvania?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that Ephraim was not a blood relative, so that's special in and of itself. My great-grandmother was his second wife, and they married in 1937 after his first wife, who was the love of his life, passed away in 1935. So it was kind of a business arrangement because Ephraim was in his 90s and my great-grandmother was in her 40s.
I give him credit for that.
And, you know, she wanted to make sure his legacy was preserved. So I think we've done that. My mom and my uncle are here today with me. And my mom actually knew Ephraim and was in parades with him as a child. So she helped to make that statue so lifelike by even down to the detail of the color of his skin, because she could remember him.
You were telling me a story that your mom, the first time she saw that mm-hmm. statue, got emotional.
Yeah.
But she also said that, I remember him being bigger than that.
She did. She said, I thought he was taller. I said, Mom, you were four. So it was good seeing them reunited, and I do have a photograph of that as well. Yeah.
So Ephraim Slaughter's legacy, what is it? He was born into slavery.
After the Civil War, he moved to Harrisburg and married, and they had no children. But his brother lived here as well. And when his brother passed away, Ephraim had already owned property by then. He was a prominent member of his church and helped them pay off the mortgage. he wanted to be buried with his wife and his brother. And my grandmother made sure that that happened.
Did your grandmother hear stories, and your mother as well, hear stories about growing up in slavery?
Absolutely. And we also have several newspaper articles. You know, Caleb has been a friend of mine for years and has helped me with my family history. I've been doing this about 35 years now. I found misinformation on a website. It wasn't intentional, but it was about Ephraim, and I was so excited to see him, you know, remembered on this website. But when I saw the misinformation and notified, you know, the people responsible, they took it down right away. And then they spoke with me and corrected everything. So it's now back up on a House Divided website, and it's accurate.
So he was born into slavery. What state, and did he escape?
He was born in, I think it's pronounced Ahoskie, North Carolina. Okay. It's south of Murfreesboro. And yes, he escaped from slavery. I actually found the slave schedule in the census records. And that was fascinating to find them on that slave schedule. But they escaped, and he became a Union soldier. I also, thanks to this museum, have his service record as well.
Yes.
Well, that must be, I mean, you have to be very proud to begin
yes.
with. But that just must be so fascinating and really emotional to have mm-hmm. that tie to, you know, those kind of documents to see that history.
Yes.
So, well, Robert Smalls, I want to turn now to Robert Smalls, so someone else who is highlighted in the film. Caleb, who was Robert Smalls? I mentioned in the introduction he was a congressman from South Carolina, but he did have ties here to the Mid-State.
Well, I was going to start at the first part. You know, he actually was a slave, escaped slavery, and he was famous for commandeering a vehicle during the Civil War.
Now, vehicle.
So, a vehicle, a ship.
Right.
Actually, it was a ship.
I was going to say.
It was a ship.
Because I was thinking of a wagon, it was actually a ship. Tell that story, because that's quite a story.
Yeah, he and a group commandeered, actually took over a ship, and I think it was in a Confederate harbor.
It was.
Which was fascinating. And when the story was out, I mean, he was known all over the country.
As a hero. Union part of the country.
For the Union part, yes.
Yeah.
Well, the Southern part knew about it too, because it was good information that they didn't want out, but they knew about it. Yes.
Yeah. He, from what I saw in the film, was he and his wife, they commandeered this ship.
Yep.
And sailed right by Fort Sumter.
Sumter, yes.
After the war had begun. So just think about that. And after a while, I guess the Southerners realized what was going on, and started firing at the ship, and fortunately they weren't hit.
Yes.
So just think about that story. So he did have ties to Central Pennsylvania?
Yes, but I'm not sure. I don't quite remember what those ties were at this point.
Okay.
I'll have to think about that a little bit.
But he went on to become a congressman.
He definitely
from
went on to become
South
a
Carolina.
Congressman from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. After the Civil War, after the 14th and 15th Amendment, a lot of African Americans freed then were able to be elected into Congress. And he was one that was elected into Congress from South Carolina.
Even after the war, you don't think of African Americans being elected in a Southern state.
Yes.
But
they were.
There's a large.
To Congress, both to the House and to the Senate. Mm. Yes.
But that's quite a story. And as I said, you pointed out in the film that he became a national hero in the Union states. I'm sure the Southern states didn't feel quite the same about that. But
he's actually featured in the African American Museum in D.C.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. See, these are just a couple examples of of the fascinating stories, but the whole film is this way.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
I mean, it's something that, I mean, obviously you were looking for, how did you find great stories like this?
Well, we started off with 12 stories,
mm-hmm.
And we narrowed it down to four main ones. We took the top four to start with. In addition to that, we wanted to highlight Wesley AME Church,
right.
Which
yes.
Was celebrating at that time the 250th anniversary. And the only church in Harrisburg that allowed burial ground for United States color troops. That was important.
Mm-hmm.
We also talk about, and as you probably watched, the YMCA. The YMCA on Front Street is actually, my husband and I have been members for over 30 years. And in the film, you'll see that at one point in time, it did not allow African Americans at the
correct.
YMCA. There's pictures in the film that, and it's hard for us to believe now. We've been members over 30 years. So that came out. So some of these stories came out just by talking to people through Caleb as well. And they were strong stories. And as we show the film, and it's been shown many times throughout Harrisburg, here at the museum, at Tabernacle, at a lot of the churches, Penn State, Harrisburg, and we have at least 6 showings coming up.
Can I interrupt for just 1 second?
Absolutely.
Because this is a good time to tell everyone listening today that WITF-TV will air the African American Oral History Project Part 1 at 9 p.m. on February 9th, 2 p.m. on February 10th, and 11 p.m. on February 11th.
Right.
So our TV audience, WITS-TV audience, will get the opportunity to see the film as well.
Exactly. And in addition to that, this month, we'll be showing at the Presbyterian Apartments, as well as Goodwin Memorial Baptist Church, the Gospel Fellowship Church, Harrisburg University, Wesley AME Church this month. But it's been shown already to several churches, and as a result, at the very end, we have a talk back, and the biggest question from everyone, because after they watch it, they want part two.
Part two,
and
yes.
The reason,
I was going to ask where part two
where
was.
Part two is,
and
yes.
That the reason is because everyone has a story. Everyone has a story in Harrisburg that you haven't heard
right.
about. This film only features four stories. And everyone's family has a story, and they want to be part of it, and they want to tell their story as well. Mm. Yeah.
Well, again, you can see it on WITF starting next week, and I encourage everyone to get a chance, whether it's on WITF-TV or at the locations that you mentioned, because it is a fabulous film. You all should be very proud. The film is African-American Oral History Project Part 1. Mm-hmm. Ruby Dow is the producer. Bob Philbin, the writer-director. Caleb Jackson Jr., local historian. Sharon Williams, family historian, and great-granddaughter of Ephraim Slaughter. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Smart Talk is supported by Capital Blue Cross, providing health care coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. More information is available at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by Pinnacle Health Spine Institute, part of UPMC Pinnacle, offering a complete range of services to diagnose and treat your spine condition. More information is available at upmcpinnacle.com/spine.
Not long ago, Civil War-themed museums focused almost entirely on the military aspects of the war. Since its inception, the National Civil War Museum in Harrisburg told the stories of the whole war, including the role of slavery as a cause for the war. Joining us during this portion of the program, during our Smart Talk road trip at the National Civil War Museum, is Wayne Motz, who is the CEO of the museum. Mr. Motz, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Scott. It's an honor to be with you and with everybody out here in the audience.
Isn't this fun? Just having
it
the energy in the audience and
sure
everyone so interested in history and learning so much about the Civil War and the post-Civil War period. But I did want to ask you, you know, we're here to start Black History Month.
Right.
And as I mentioned in the introduction, that this museum was one of the first, at least that I know of, that actually told the story of African Americans during the Civil War. So many museums, so many battlefields that you would go to, it was strictly, okay, here's where General so-and-so was, his troops moved here. Not here. This told the story of slavery. Right. This told the story of the African-American in the Civil War. Why was that important?
Well, what's really important about what we do here, I think, Scott, and what you've just mentioned is the totality of what we do here and the presentation here. When this museum was constructed, and you're exactly right, one of the first things they did was talk about the causes of the war. Scholars have known for years, why we had an American Civil War. And we had an American Civil War because of slavery. That's the reason why we had a Civil War. And if you go into the gallery upstairs, it's the first thing you're hit with right up front. There were no punches pulled here. There was no description that was edited here. That's right up front in the presentation of this museum. And it goes from the causes of the war through the war and the consequences of the war. So we also have panels throughout the museum, as Bob had mentioned earlier, from Civil War to civil rights. So we're trying to make connections to the world that we all live in today. And the world that we all live in today is a direct outcome of the American Civil War fought over 150 years ago.
In what way?
Well, in many, 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 many ways. First of all, I don't think you have the march from Selma to Montgomery until you have the march at Appomattox. Unless you have the end of the American Civil War and the March at Appomattox, you don't have the continuation of that unfinished work that Lincoln had said. There are many other things. We didn't have an income tax. Some of them aren't going to like this, but we didn't have an income tax until the Civil War. Scott, there are many other many other things in our lives today that are affected by the Civil War. Those are just a couple examples. But the power and the supremacy of the federal government was one of those most established coming out of the American Civil War. Some scholars say before the Civil War, it was the United States. We are going to do this. And after the Civil War, we went from an are to an is about the best way to describe that.
Why is it that we went in this country, those museums, those battlefields, that we went 140 years before admitting that slavery was the real reason behind that war?
Well, I'm not sure that we didn't admit that that
well,
was
Well, some
that was
did, if but, historians, yeah. but still, many museums
right.
would talk, again, yeah. about the military aspects of it, but not about slavery.
Right, and I think part of that is the continuing narrative of interpretation of the Civil War. We continue to interpret the Civil War in many different ways today. There isn't a standard way to interpret it. I think people think that our job in history is, well, 2 + 2 always equals 4.
Right.
In our job, there's interpretation. There's motivations, there's reasons why, and that continues to evolve. It's evolved from 1865 all the way up to today. And for those of us in the audience and for your listeners, you know, the Civil War ended in 1865, ended in April of 1865. Since the day the Civil War ended, there have been over 60,000 books published on the American Civil War. That's a book a day since the Civil War ended. So we, you know, we have a lot that we have to digest and we have to work through. And I think it's a part that we're just evolving our interpretation on those things.
I don't know whether you can answer this or not, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. What narrative has changed from 1865, 1875, 1880? And I'm going to ask specifically
sure.
about
sure.
Black history and
right.
the role of African Americans
right.
in the Civil War to today.
Well, clearly, the participation of African Americans in all aspects of the war, that includes the military fighting the Civil War, it includes civilian aspects of the war, in politics. Clearly today, that story is being told. And that story was not told in 1880. It wasn't told in 1890. It depends. If you're Joseph T. Wilson and you're an African American author, a former soldier of the Civil War, you wrote a book published in 1888 called The Black Phalanx. And that book was on African American participation in the Civil War. So if you know where to look, you can find these things. But a lot of that narrative was not generally accepted, and a lot of the focus was not on it. So what I'm proud of in the museum field and in the Civil War field is we're looking at the Civil War in a more complete view, which we didn't have 100 years ago.
What does this museum have dealing with the African-American experience in the Civil War and slavery that is unique?
Okay, let me start with what does the museum not have that doesn't deal with that?
Okay, all right.
So let's start with that. How about the entire Civil War as we just talked about? So beginning right when you first come into the museum, you learn about the African American experience in slavery and what that meant to people 175 years ago. You go right into the first shots in the training of the armies, and then you go into the recruitment of African American soldiers. The Navy had always been an integrated service. You could serve as an African American.
Really?
In the
I didn't
Navy.
Know that.
Yes,
that,
yes.
I didn't know that.
As a matter of fact, even before Lincoln had signed the Confiscation Act and an act to set up the Militia Act, which is in July of 1862, that's the recruitment of African American soldiers to come in earnest there. And then later on in 1863, you could serve as a black man in the Navy and you would serve with white men side by side in the United States Navy there. So that story is being told throughout the gallery. And then in addition, as I just mentioned to you, the panels that go throughout the galleries that talk about the Civil War as it goes on up into civil rights and the post-era of Reconstruction, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment of the United States.
I don't want to give too much credit if it's not due, but just as an observation, it seemed as though once the film Glory came out,
mm-hmm.
about the 54th Massachusetts, right?
Right, right.
About the 54th Massachusetts, one of the first and one of the most decorated African-American mm-hmm. troops fighting for the Union. Once that came out, there seemed to be a lot more interest in, as they were called, United States colored troops.
Right.
Is that observation, is that just mine, or did that actually happen?
No, I think that's a correct observation. And when the movie Gettysburg came out,
right.
of course, there was a lot of interest that had in Gettysburg. Glory, which was a movie that was released in 1989 that focused on this regiment, the 54th Massachusetts, that fought in South Carolina during the American Civil War. Frederick Douglass's son was a member of this outfit during the American Civil War. That led to a lot of awareness about that. And historians have argue to this day how accurate the film was. I get calls all the time, you know, Wayne, is Gettysburg accurate? Is this movie accurate? It gets people interested, Scott.
Right.
Start there. Let's get folks interested in the history. That's so important to us. I'll take any means to do that. And then we can address, well, there were certain parts of that film, this is what we'd rather say. But if it gets people motivated, if it gets them interested to learn more about this critical part of our nation's history, then it's important. And I think your observation is correct. Anytime we get one of those things, it bumps up our interest and our appreciation for that.
You know, Ruby mentioned earlier in the program about Bethel AME and some of the black troops buried there. Columbia, along the Susquehanna River in Lancaster County, actually there are some former members of the 54th Massachusetts.
Sure. Right.
That are buried in Columbia.
Right.
So even here in central Pennsylvania, there are some ties to it. I just finished reading a book about Edwin Stanton, who was Lincoln's Secretary of War. And a good portion of that book was devoted to how controversial it was to have black troops that they were able to fight.
Right.
And there were, at first it was, okay, we'll have blacks in the military, but they won't have a fighting role. And then they actually got the opportunity to fight alongside white troops. But, I mean, this was hugely controversial.
Right.
And not all the Union, in fact, many of the Union commanders were not on board. I think General Sherman, for one, William Sherman, Tecumseh Sherman, was not on board with having black troops fight. But they showed they were good fighters, and you can make the point that they helped win the war.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question of that. So the historians usually say about 180,000 African-American servicemen fought at the time of the Civil War in the Union Army, and they were normally in units called the United States Colored Troops. Those were the units established by the government. They usually had white officers, although there were about 80 black commissioned officers. We're going to have a first-person presentation here at the museum on our free day, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, on Martin Delaney, who was a major, the highest-ranking black officer during the time of the American Civil War. What we can say about this, Scott, which is interesting, is the participation, the valor, the heroism by these black troops. What it led to is it led to, after the Civil War, the creation of African-American units in service of the United States in the regular Army. So before the American Civil War, there were not African-American units in the constabulary in the regular Army. In War of 1812, in the Civil War, volunteers were called in, but they were not allowed to serve in the constabulary Army. After the American Civil War, there were four regiments that were created of infantry. There were two regiments of cavalry that were created. Eventually, the infantry went into two regiments of solely black servicemen, and they were usually white officers, but they had black officers as well, and they stayed in the U.S. regular Army as a permanent constabulary. And that was a result of what their participation was, their heroism was during the Civil War. Everybody saw that.
Just
recognized
to it. Provide some context to that, last April, Smart Talk Road Trip, we had a Smart Talk Road Trip to the Museum of the American Revolution in Philadelphia, where there is an exhibit of I'm going to say black because I don't know that everyone was African-American. But anyway, that most of the blacks that fought in the American Revolution fought on the British side because they were escaping slavery and the British actually would allow them to fight. So that shows how far we came in 80 years, 90 years for the American Civil War. Now, you mentioned the Free Day. I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to promote that.
Yes. Yeah, so our Free Day is going to be Saturday, February 17th. We have a full slate of activities here at the museum that will be from 10 a.m. in the morning until 4 p.m. In the afternoon. We'll have living history encampments here. We'll have activity stations for children here. And we'll have three presentations that will be in the afternoon. One will be on Abraham Lincoln. One will be Dr. Elizabeth Varon from the University of Virginia talking about Joseph T. Wilson and the Black Phalanx, the seminal book related to black service in the Civil War. And then lastly, we're going to have a living history impression by Tim Hodges of Martin Delaney, the highest-ranking African-American serviceman during the time of the Civil War. And living history, we're going to have living history troops from Philadelphia from the 3rd United States Colored Troops, a Pennsylvania unit that was recruited and fought in the American Civil War and trained at Camp William Penn. Pennsylvania had the most number of African-American servicemen in the U.S. colored troops of any state in the Union at the time of the American Civil War. So there's a proud lineage and heritage, and many of those connections come from right here in Harrisburg and central Pennsylvania, including Ephraim Slaughter that was mentioned, who's buried very close here to the museum. This is a man who lived in Harrisburg from about 1869 to his death in 1943 when he was just about 97 years old. How do we survive the Civil War and be that old? I wish you and I had that secret, Scott.
Wayne Motz is the CEO of the National Civil War Museum here in Harrisburg. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Scott, we're honored here on behalf of the board and staff of the museum to host you this morning. We hope everyone comes out and visits the museum. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're broadcasting live from the National Civil War Museum in Harrisburg. It's a Smart Talk road trip, and we want to thank our sponsor that we couldn't do this without their support. Roof Advisory Group is the sponsor of Smart Talk road trips, so always appreciate the help and support that we get from a Roof Advisory Group that makes this possible. I say this on the air, and I have a reason for doing that. It's because I always say that we have a good time, and it's a lot of fun. With these Smart Talk road trip live broadcasts, I don't know, there's more energy in the room when you have a live broadcast rather than just sitting in the studio. Although I do love sitting in the studio, and I don't prop my feet up, but if I could, I would. But it is a lot of fun to have a great time with the live audience. And I want to encourage our audience that if you have a question or a comment, step right up to the microphone, and we'll see you and get you on the air asking that question. Now I want to turn to something else. I mean, we've been talking a lot what this museum does, what the film that we mentioned earlier does, and that is telling stories. Telling the story and establishing African Americans as an important and vital part of the community through theater is the goal of the Sankofa African American Theater in Harrisburg. And joining us, Sharia Ben, who is Managing Director of Sankofa African American Theater. Ms. Ben, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, applause.
That's you, Nancy. Right.
Yeah, it's just like being on stage. I love it. I love a live audience.
I know. Sina, you're used to this. You're used to this, but there's something to be said about having a live audience, isn't there?
Oh, it is. And that is why my preference for entertainment is live theater. I think movies are great, but there's nothing like engaging an audience and looking out and seeing faces and the reaction to what's going on the stage as the story is unfolding. And for an actor, you can literally adjust your presentation and how you respond, saying the same lines every night, but when you see that, boom, I've connected or disconnected with someone, let me adjust so that I can reconnect or take that connection further. So, and that is the beauty of theater, and the beauty of using theater as a vehicle to connect, bring a community together, and specifically for Sankofa, engage Harrisburg around the African-American experience.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, the film I mentioned earlier is just fantastic. People will learn a lot. Anyone who comes through this museum will learn a lot. Theater is just not entertainment. What you want to do, part of your goal, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so you can tell me what inspired you with this, but that part of your goal for Sankofa is to teach people about African-American history and culture here in Harrisburg in central Pennsylvania.
Precisely.
How does the theater do that?
So theater is a safe space for most people. It gives the appearance in some situations that we're freer to explore. We're freer to experience something because it's pretend or it's happening somewhere else, and I am watching this unfold, and it's fun again, and it's a vehicle where it opens up dialogue. So people, after seeing it, they want to participate. They want to continue a conversation, and around what they saw on the stage. So when we talk about the things that have happened, especially in our culture, when we look at Black history and the African-American experience, there are some really difficult topics. You know, as Wayne said, when we get to the meat of it, the Civil War was about slavery, and that's uncomfortable. But if we can put it in a context of, well, let's learn about the Civil War, the history, the facts, but then let's explore it as a script or on stage. And then, wow, let's talk about it. It's more approachable. And with Sankofa, one of the things that differentiates what our mission and vision is, it's not just about the African-American experience telling that, because many historians, any historian can look up some facts and tell the story. It really is about understanding and exploring, valuing and celebrating African-Americans as part of this community, as part of our history, but also seeing it from the African-American perspective. So written by, led by, researched by, produced by African-Americans. And when you tell your story, you know what you've been through. So you can tell it, and you tell it well. You tell it with an authenticity that is compelling. It's the same thing with the African-American experience. So that's important.
And let's face it, many people learn better, and I'm not going to discourage people from reading books, because obviously we want them to read, go to the internet, learn as much as they can. But there are many people who learn more by seeing it visually. Mm-hmm. And again, this goes back to what you were talking about earlier, that energy on stage, that you can draw your audience in to this experience and getting them asking questions. Okay, you said something that a lot of us probably have never witnessed if we haven't been on stage performing like that. You say you can see when the audience reacts or when you've connected with the audience. How? What do you notice when you've connected to the audience? And let me ask you the second part of that question. Do you connect with both Black and white audiences?
Great question. So I'm going to start with your first part. How do I know that I've connected? Body language changes. The energy changes. There's a lean in, a lean out. There are tears. There's laughter. And so you can, there are physical ways that you can see it. But then there are delayed reactions. So you see someone that has seen a production, and weeks later, they send you an email, or they call you, or they see you in the grocery store, and they continue the conversation. So you know that cognitively, this and thought-provoking theater has happened. And so that's how we know. But with Sankofa, this is a very holistic and inclusive model. Our focus is specifically the African-American experience, but we cannot tell our stories. We cannot truthfully produce and engage our audience without recognizing that my story as an African-American is not whole or full without including all cultures, all races, that had an impact. So that's important. We embrace everyone.
We have someone from our audience. Jan,
What's your question or comment?
Yes, this is wonderful. This is really very interesting. Maybe you just answered my question. Speaking of the African American experience, there are many African American experiences, and I wonder if you would just say a little bit about something like that.
Definitely, a lot of experiences. So I want to maybe step back and address some of the model and the programming for Sankofa. So we are a theater company. So ultimately, it is to put on a production. But we start with a different type of production than you would normally think of when you think of a theater, a play. Our productions start with the learning. And we spent almost a year in strategic planning, wanting to be very purposeful of what we wanted to do and what this community needed. And I'm from Baltimore, so when I came here from Baltimore in 1995 for my professional career, I was looking for something to do. I love theater, and I couldn't find opportunities here in Harrisburg for me. So I ended up not being able to fulfill that passion for a long time. And then when I could, there were roles that were sporadic, periodic. And then Open Stage had made a commitment to do the August Wilson cycle plays.
Yeah, so, Open Stage Harrisburg. I want to mention that because you're a partnership with them.
Yes, right now we're a project of Open Stage, and this kind of grew out of that ensemble who'd now been able to get together at least once a year to do a play. But once a year is not enough to really give our stories and our experience the focus and the value that is needed. So we said we need this in Sankofa. And in Sankofa, we are community-based. So our model is to first go into the community spaces where our people are and train them on theater arts, the techniques, and also explore our history. So you talked about reading and books. In order to put on a show, you have to understand. So there's dramaturgy. So we use that to either build the shows or write them. And we're starting with young people. So we have a peer-to-peer program where we're training high school teens in dramatic art techniques and also in curriculum building. These teens go into our partnership programs, community spaces, schools, and they deliver the training to middle school students. And this program is these middle school students, they pick the experience that they ultimately want to produce on stage. And through 8 to 12 weeks of classroom and technique training, which they're learning how to collaborate, they're learning how to finance, they're learning to read, they're learning tech, and they're researching. And whatever stories are relevant to them, whether it's Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, whether it's bullying, whether it's whatever is relevant in that community space, that's the experience that they produce. As a whole, we, as for Sankofa, one of the focuses for our works will be one to showcase African American playwrights. We have a rich canon of work that we can produce here, but also our experiences, and this theater is about healing and building our community. We've got to find a way to understand that we are different and that's okay. That's what makes us great. But as much as we are different, we are together. And get rid of that bridge that divides us. So using theater to cross the bridges and taking works like August Wilson into the West Shore classrooms.
We only have about 2 minutes left. What projects are you working on right now?
We're working on Aquila and the Bee, which is a collaborative partnership with Open Stage, which opens February the 16th and runs through March 11th. So you can go to the Open Stage Harrisburg website and get information. A beautiful story about community coming together. And then some exciting collaborative work with Gamut Theater, which just be on the listen out for some work that we'll be doing with them in April.
And just as an aside, Aquila and the Bee, that's right, right?
Aquila and the Bee, so it's a stage adaptation.
I understand that there is a part for radio announcers there. And it will be several WITF.
Yes.
Will be appearing as, now it's a hard part to, it's really hard.
Really hard. I hope you're up to the challenge.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, we have about 30 seconds left. What do you see for the future for Akova?
I see that we will become an integral part of this community, not just inside or on a stage, but building lives and healing and creating a sense of healing and hope and strengthening our community at large.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's inspirational just hearing you talk about it. Sharia Ben is Managing Director of Sankofa African American Theater. Good luck and thank you for all the good work that you do. It's not just between races, ethnic backgrounds, but there's a lot of division, a lot of harsh words. It's nice to be able to hear something that actually brings people together. So thank you very much for being with us today. Smart Talk Road Trips are supported by Roof Advisory Group. I want to thank the Civil War Museum, the National Civil War Museum, for allowing us to come and talk about African-American history and culture on this first day of Black History Month, and encourage everyone to go see the film or watch the film that we talked about earlier when it appears on WITF-TV. That's the African American Oral History Project, Project One. That will be February 9th at 9 p.m., 2 p.m. on February 10th, 11 p.m. on February 11th, National Civil War Museum, and also the Sankofa Theater. Thank you very much for being with us today. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk about underage drinking and the LCB trying to hit even younger age groups with a campaign. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar.
Smart Talk is produced by WITF as part of our mission to deliver relevant, high-quality programming. Support comes from Capital Blue Cross, which shares WITF's commitment to being a trusted resource in our communities. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC Pinnacle, who is studying a new surgical technique that allows surgeons to make repairs to the heart without having to open the chest cavity and while the heart is beating. Info at upmcpinnacle.com.